My name is Darrell Miller. I'm 38 years old.
I'm Leo Lenski, and I'm 66 years old.
My name is Conrad. I'm 6 years old.
My name is Mac McLeod. I'm 81 years old.
Hi, my name is Lorenzo Karenunian.
My name is Miguel Karenunian.
I am 28 years old.
And I am 23 years old.
My name is Liam. My age is 9.
My name is Betty Jane Berger. I'm 71.
Oh, my name is Paul Lauer.
I'm Elizabeth Dinkins.
I am 65 years old.
This is Kathy Zirkle.
My name is Ellen Allen.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Don Wilson, 37 years old.
Will Laird. I'm 40 years old.
This is September 24th.
September 21st, 2018.
Today's date is September 12th, 2018.
We are in Charleston, West Virginia.
We're here in Charleston, West Virginia.
I'm in Charleston, West Virginia with my coworker and friend, Phil Hanen.
And I'm with my boss, who doesn't seem like a boss.
I am interviewing my mother today.
In the relationship to my partner is my cousin, Darrell Miller. Yeah.
I am with my two sons.
I am your daughter.
I'm going to talk to Kathy, my friend.
And I'm here with my brother, Miguel.
When and where were you born?
1946, Morgantown, West Virginia.
What is some of your most vivid memories of Grandma?
Well, she was always busy. She just was so interested in so many things. And, of course, after my father lost his job, money was running out. There were three kids and a mortgage. And she looked at her hands and said, what can I do? So she said, I can sew. So she started making doll clothes for the neighborhood kids. And then she went to Pennsylvania and learned how to repair dolls. And so she started a business right in our home. And she called it the Dollhouse. So I grew up with the phone ringing and customers coming in the door and dolls in every room. And she would have little drawers full of wigs and hands and parts of dolls, and I saw her repair dolls and make beautiful costumes for them, and it was just marvelous what she could do with that sewing machine.
What is it like to be your dad?
What's it like to be your dad? Oh man, I feel like the luckiest guy in the world. You guys are so much fun. I always knew that I wanted to be a dad, but you never can know how much you're gonna enjoy it until it happens. And it sounds strange, but I always, sort of in my mind, the way that I saw it playing out was I always thought I would have two boys. And here you are.
Been weird growing up here, right?
Yeah, like I don't know. We have talked about it at length a lot because we are Asian Americans in, you know, West Virginia. We're different.
As a Filipino American, you grow up and you're in this weird place, weirder than I feel like most people would be as far as being in our position as like second generation immigrants, right?
We don't really fit in either place.
We're different everywhere. We never just get to be in a thing and not get a bunch of awkward, stupid questions about it.
I just don't want to be defined anymore. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I want my kid to have, like, pride in, you know, being Filipino and everything. I just don't want that to be what defines them. I don't want them to be like us, because that's what we are. That's what we are. That is what we have always been. We have always been those Filipino kids. That's all we've been, and that's what I don't want.
I know.
You and me are two of the most understanding, loving people ever because we understand what it feels like not to be loved and understood.
Yeah.
That is a positive thing that you and I can take from this for the rest of our lives and teach it to other people.
And you can teach me to not be so angry about it all the time, because I am.
You know, geography determines so much of our destiny. We're not all created equal. We don't all start out with the same advantages. You know, if we look at historically the roots of Appalachia and the deep poverty and the lack of opportunity, I would like people to explore those roots more deeply because it's very complex. And I think what I'd like our community to try to understand is to think more deeply about how people arrive at homelessness. I have not yet met the person who truly wants to be homeless or in the spiral of deep addiction. You can't just say, well, let's round them up and get them out of town so we don't have to look at them, or and they're all criminals or drug addicts, let's just get them out of town because we all know they're from out of state. Well, 95% of the people that come into our doors are either from rural parts of our county, our own city, and the rural parts of West Virginia, where there's just not many options remaining for them. That's what I would like people to know.
Me and you ain't never had a dispute, man.
No.
Like, not even for a minute. Like, I mean, we used to brawl when we was kids.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you put a, you know, two alpha, you know, athletes in the same room with the same family and the same rights to everything.
Yeah.
We're going to fight. We fought like kids. But
yeah.
I mean, other than like the normal, you know,
yeah,
fight,
normal kid stuff.
You know, I remember you used to rough me up and then you'd act like you was hurt too.
I did.
and then Granny would come in the room. We'd both be hurt.
Like, ain't nobody getting in trouble.
I wouldn't even tell on you. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, but we're more than what brothers are. You know what I'm saying? It's like we really been walking at the same pace, even when you far away and when you not far. You know, when I moved to Huntington,
yeah,
we still was on the same.
Still.
I mean, talking every day, helping me pay my rent. Like without you, there wouldn't be no me, man. Like everything I built up to business wise and all that stuff came down to you really guiding me, dog. You know, coming from where we came from and seeing the stuff that we didn't see, man, and being able to be on the front page of the paper, you know what I'm saying, for good stuff.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because I remember they used to always give us that story. Former Stonewall football former Capitol football, basketball player gets arrested. Or you see all those negative things. But for us to come out of the West Side, man, and really be the engines, you know what I'm saying? People don't realize the stuff that when you've been to the bottom with somebody, climbing to the top is the good part.
That's
you know
the
what I'm
best
saying?
Experience.
That's the best part.
Yeah. Not the top, you know, the climb.
It's the climb, man.
I liked school, but I didn't like getting picked on. I remember when I first went to elementary school, I didn't want to fight. So next thing you know, when kids find out that you won't fight back, well, the class peewee will come up and pick a fight with you because now they're all brave, and most of them acted because they wanted to be seen by their peers. And now I'm cool. I can whip his butt. But it's like I was the original Forrest Gump to a degree because Beverly went to elementary school with me at that one-room school until she was in the sixth and I was in the fourth. And those boys would pick a fight with me. She would grab them when the bell rang and hold on to them and say, "Run home, Leo, run home, okay." And I would run. I was pretty fast. So.
I met you. You had already been a bit of a legend. What was it like to be a woman river guide, and what was it like to be a woman river manager when you started? Tell me how you did that.
I did more than most men were expected to do. I took the worst crews. I took the heaviest coolers. If the boat was flat and didn't have enough air, I would be the one that took it because I knew I had to work twice as hard to be respected. I never used my femininity or my sex as an excuse for my poor performance or for the inability to do certain things. It certainly wasn't fair. I don't think it is ever going to be fair, but I recognized that I needed to work twice as hard to get half the respect.
When Mom and I were dating, Mom lived in the city of Pittsburgh. I lived in the suburbs, and she decided that one weekend she was going to be the person who came to visit me. You would have to walk to the bus station, you'd have to get on a bus, travel into the city of Pittsburgh, find a trolley, and take a trolley out to where I lived. So she announced one Saturday that's what she was going to do. And what she didn't tell me was that she was going to bake me this pie. And as you know, your mom was a pie baker like no one else. She baked this giant pie, carried it to the bus stop, got on the bus, rode the trolley out, and I met her at the trolley station, and she's got this great big smile on her face and this great big strawberry rhubarb pie in her hands. And so we went back to my apartment, and we didn't do anything in particular that day. I ate a whole lot of strawberry rhubarb pie, and we talked and we laughed. And as the evening came, it was time for Mom to go home. She left the pie, what was left of it, and I took her back to the trolley stop and she made her way back. The next morning I got up, and for breakfast I had strawberry rhubarb pie. And at that moment, I knew that your mom was the girl for me. And whenever I tell that story, everybody thinks that I married your mom because she was a great pie baker. And she was. But that wasn't the point of the story. The point was that just being near your mom was such a thrill. That we didn't have to do anything special. It was that enough was cause for great joy. And you know, the thing about it is, Kate, that never changed for as long as I knew your mom.
What's the best moment that you've ever had?
On August the 20th, 2011, my partner and I had our commitment ceremony. At that time, marriage was not yet legal, but we wanted to have the whole fanfare. So we had the venue, the tuxedos, the flowers, the whole nine yards. And I remember standing beside of him just as we were getting ready to walk down the aisle, and I thought, there is someone who loves me enough to want to spend the rest of their life with me. And there was a song called Reflections of Passion by Yanni. And it's an instrumental song, but there is a cymbal crash close to the middle of it. And that was, we said, that's when we're going to step out and walk down the aisle on that cymbal crash. And that's the one thing that I will always remember, is just hearing those cymbals and stepping out, and like 125 of our closest friends and family are staring at us. And it was just the most magical thing ever.
What kind of wisdom have you gleaned, would you say?
I would just say love with all your heart, love with a total open mind, accept everything immediately, and then work out the details later. I know one time I had a parishioner whose son had told him that he was gay, and he wanted to see me. He was very upset. I went to the guy's house. And I don't know, it just came to me. I just said, have you talked to Billy? And he said, well, he told me we're going to get together later. He told me on the phone we're going to get together. And I said, well, you now have the greatest opportunity afforded anybody to show how much you love somebody. And I think that would be what I would want my progeny to know, is that love and love well. And be accepting, even though at first it seems like maybe it's going to be too hard, and maybe it will be, but the initial thing should be love.
Would you mind if I gave you my number and I told my friends about you too? I know it's early, but I can't go another Shenandoah morning.